Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I sit down with singer-songwriter Christina Martin and we have a delightful chat. Christina's life is absolutely fascinating. It's so nomadic and it just shows different levels of confidence for somebody that's just literally grabbed life and run with it. And it's a really, really great chat, this one. And as I've said on some of the other previous episodes, you know that you've connected with a guest and it's been a lovely chat because when you press stop at the end, you still stay on the chat and you're chatting away because there's that nice connection. And it was very much the case with this. Christina's delightful and you're going to really enjoy this episode. Before we get on with the episode, I have to do the thank yous, obviously. And so I want to thank you lot first for continuing to support Off the Beaten Track. I need to thank the team at the Blue Murder Club podcast because they produce this podcast. And that's a true crime podcast. It's a fantastic listen. And I urge you all to go and check it. They have guests sometimes. And if you go over and have a little look through their episodes, you'll recognise a few of the guests because a few have been on this podcast. I want to thank Scroobius Pip, who's the pop, you know, he's the podfather, he's the dad. And if it weren't for Pip, then I would never be doing podcasts. And it's all because of just getting to guest on Pip's podcast many, many, many years ago. And to this day, you know, a real pioneer of the game was Pip. And to see that he's still putting out such great content on the Distraction Pieces podcast, as are so many of my peers on the Distraction Pieces Network. So go check out all the podcasts over there. If it's your first time listening, hello and welcome. You're very, very, very late to the party. I'm over 500 episodes in, so you've got so much stuff to catch up on. But trust me, it's all for free, and you can go and listen to it as and when and wherever. We're on all the usual podcast platforms. And we're on all the social media platforms. So go and enjoy that back catalogue. Have a look through there because you'll recognise so many of the guests I've had on, whether it be big stadium rock bands like Motley Crue and the Foo Fighters, through to amazing actors like David Duchovny of X-Files, through to amazing DJs and producers like Butch Vig and Fatboy Slim, big indie bands like The Killers, The Kaiser Chiefs. The list goes on. Go and have a good look in that archive and subscribe. That's the best thing, and then you won't miss anything. And if you'd like to support the podcast even more, I mentioned briefly social media. Normally, we're most active, I guess I would say, on Instagram. So give us a follow over there. Just search Off the Beaten Track and give us a follow. And if you really want to support us and show your love for this podcast, let me tell you about Patreon. You can watch all of these episodes. If you like to watch your podcasts, if you head over to Patreon, you can watch the episodes over there because I upload the videos. You get access to hundreds and hundreds of radio shows that I've produced. And there's so much stuff. There's literally, there's 3 years of stuff that you can go and get stuck into. But what you also get is this lovely little thing that we set up about 6 months ago, and it's a monthly hangout, like a little live show. It's done over Zoom, and and we pick a question. We've done like certain questions from the podcast, but then sometimes we go, right, let's talk about our favourite music videos today or our favourite album artwork. And we get this lovely little gang of people. And it's not a cool, oh, picking obscure stuff to try and out-cool each other. It's so heavily on nostalgia and, you know, and what these things mean to you. And it's become, it really has become one of my favourite things to do each month. And it's, we've created such a lovely little gang of people. And we'd love more people to come and join. And you don't have to have your camera on. You don't have to have your mic on. You can just be there and listen in or watch in, and or you can get as involved as you'd like, because it's also your opportunity to feature on the podcast as well. And so for all of that stuff that I've just mentioned, I'll try and keep it really, really cheap because, well, certainly in the UK, there's a cost of living crisis going on, and totally understand that funds are cheap. But it's $1 a month, and I think that's about 70 pence. So for 70 pence, that's what you get. You get your ticket to your live show. You get to watch all the episodes. You get to access to all the radio shows, all the playlists, and so much stuff that's been out for the last sort of 2 or 3 years. So go get stuck into all of that. And by signing up to Patreon, you're really supporting the podcast, and it'd be much appreciated. And you can find out about that at Patreon, patreon.com/offthebeatandtrack. Or for the socials, for Patreon, for everything else, your one-stop shop is offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. And that's beat and, not beaten, offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Right, that's all the thank yous and the pitching for you to sign up and give me all your money and to support us over on Patreon. Let's get to the good stuff and the reason that you're here. So it gives me great delight to say, please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with the delightful Christina Martin.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin.
Okay, we are recording. Christina, how are you today?
I'm fabulous. I'm so happy to be here in London, actually.
I know. We've just had a little chat, and you've come over to London, and you just said, yeah, you know, it's nice. We've got some okay weather, and I had to sort of explain that the moment we get a tinge of sunshine, we go crazy. We start barbecuing. You know, there's guys walking around with their shirts off. This is about as hot as it gets in the UK. So you've lucked right out. You're going to catch London at its prime.
Yeah, it's been really wonderful. I'm just glad it's not raining, because that's what we all hear when we go over to the UK. Okay, bring your rain jacket, bring your umbrella. I did not. So I've been really lucky. That being said, we did go to Greenwich and it did rain. And I've been told that no matter what, if you go there, it's going to rain.
Yeah.
And it did.
You can pretty much apply that to just the UK in general. But yeah, wonderful. Well, look, let's just jump straight in. And we always kick things off with asking about what you regard, Christina, to be the song with the greatest ever intro, please.
So for me, the greatest intro starts with just an incredible, iconic voice, and only the voice. And so I picked Whitney Houston's version of I Will Always Love You.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, for me, I'm attracted to the power, iconic singers, Whitney Houston, Roy Orbison, and, you know, singers like that in that department. And there's something about her voice that, I mean, there's a reason why she's like so iconic, right? Yeah. And it just really resonates with me. And it always makes me cry. This song always makes me cry, even before, you know, the tragedy of how Whitney's life ended. Yeah. Such a beautiful, beautiful song. Yeah. Oh,
it's perfect. It's so strange because, like, I grew up like listening, like my grandparents and my parents listened to Dolly Parton records, and I grew up listening to so many, and it felt that I Will Always Love You wasn't one of Dolly's big tunes, and it was only in retrospect on the kind of enormity of the success of Whitney Houston's version, and obviously, you know, to soundtrack the Bodyguard movie as well, when you've got arguably the most famous singer in the world, makes a movie with arguably one of the most biggest actors in the world at that point as well. It's that's a powerful sort of combination that gets thrown out to the world. And her version of that record, I mean, as much as I love Dolly, Whitney made that something very, very special. And
yeah, isn't that...
Go on, sorry.
No, I totally interjected, but isn't that interesting how you've got this great song by another iconic singer that never made it big, but then like the right time, the right emotion behind it, the right arrangement, production, like it really does matter. These things matter. And, you know, who would have, like, you know, that nobody could have guaranteed that would have been this as massive a hit as it was.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was interesting. The perfect storm.
Absolutely. I mean, Whitney Houston could sing nursery rhymes and sell a billion copies because
probably
that vocal is ridiculous. And I went to the cinema a little while ago to watch the recent Whitney movie, and you know, you see what the press report upon her, you know, on the sort of decline of her life, and it was really harrowing. And when you see so much of the early stuff and you know, you watch these documentaries and these films about her, like the pure talent is just ridiculous. And
yeah,
and just that voice, it absolutely sears. And to bring it back to that tune as well, I think the video was so cleverly done. Obviously it was there to promo the film as well, but just that scene before the last chorus where she opens her eyes and then bang, it drops. And
boom.
It's huge. And
yeah,
I mean, it didn't get any bigger than Whitney Houston at that point. You know, if you listen to I Have Nothing and Run to You off of the Bodyguard soundtrack, they're like huge, huge epic songs, aren't they? And
I do love them, yeah.
Not many people can... Well, you see it so often when people try and cover them records. It's like, good luck with that. You know, you can have your own interpretation, but don't try and go that big because you won't ever nail it the way that Whitney Houston nails big. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, why bother? You know, like, yeah. I don't think I could pull it off, but I would never touch it. Like, never. You'd have to, like, maybe this is why if you take a song like that, it might be cool to try and totally make it something other than it was.
Yeah.
But to try to I'm not good at that when I do a cover. I don't do a lot of covers, but you know, cuz I'm imitating off of I Fell in Love with the Original. That's what resonates. So like, you know, I just hope that my voice is just different enough that it doesn't sound like I'm completely copying it.
Absolutely. And that
singing it in your own voice is enough of a change for people.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, you're right. You know what? Listeners, don't even bother trying to cover this song. All right.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take you back and I'm going to ask you, please, for track two, Christina, to tell me about the first song that you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
Sure thing. These are great, great, you know, memory triggers for me. I hadn't thought about this song for a long time, but Vincent by Don McLean. And I remember my childhood bedroom. I had like pink walls and just wall-to-wall stuffed animals. And I had a cassette tape recorder. And I would wait in my room. I'd listen to the radio and I'd wait for... I'd hit record, play and record on my cassette tape recorder. Boombox? I don't even know what... I can't remember what we called them. And, you know, I would hit just before the song played. And then if I liked the song, I would keep it. I wouldn't record over it. And one of the songs that played on the radio at that time would have been like, I'd say the early 80s to mid 80s. I don't know when this song came out, but was Vincent. And it really resonated with me. I'm going to say all these songs today resonated with me, but I would have been, geez, like, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years old. It was the first song that moved me so much that I became obsessed with memorizing the lyrics and singing along. And it was probably the first poem that I got hooked on because it really reads like poetry. Sure. It certainly sings like that. It has this cadence to it that it's like the ultimate exercise in learning how to breathe And it felt like that for me. It was so soothing. And I think it was the first time that I really started thinking about the character in the song. And I think I felt sorry for the guy. I mean, because ultimately he took his life in the songs, yeah. What it sounded like. And but he also, like, it painted the picture, you know, that it was such a vivid description and a rich life that this character had of, like, you know, intense, like, passion and loss and pain. And they mentioned the word artist, and I thought, okay, that's what an artist is. And I thought, well, how cool would that be? You know, there's something mysterious and haunting and about this guy that took his own life. And I guess I was drawn to that. And it sounded like a guy that nobody would listen to. And even after he was dead, some people wouldn't listen. And I guess that resonated with me as a little girl, because I kind of, that's something I could relate with, like being the youngest in a family of boys and just not really feeling like I was ever heard. And so I don't know. It's just, yeah. And then the strange thing about this song, Stu, was that, you know, about a decade or so later when I started buying CDs, I ordered a Don McLean's Greatest Hits CD, I didn't know Don McLean wrote that song and sang it. And I think I'd bought it because American Pie was on it.
Sure.
And then I listened to that CD, and, you know, because you buy a CD in the olden days, you buy it for, like, the hit. And then I listened, and Vincent was on it, and I knew all the words from, like, when I was a little girl. And it was this incredible moment, and I had no one to tell. Nobody would care. Nobody was into that song.
Yeah.
Where I was from. So it was this private little excitement. It's just like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
Men years later, I actually had this opportunity to meet Don McLean in passing. So I was playing at the Stan Rogers Festival on the main stage, and Don's set was switched around, and he ended up playing before me. And I made this horrible joke after he walks off stage. I go on and I thanked him for opening for me. And, you know, here I am at, like, the beginning of my career, and I shouldn't have made jokes like that, but I did. And yeah, I was so grateful because his audience was there. You know, had it been the other way around, they would have just been walking in while I was playing, kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh,
so there you go. That was a long little, but Vincent was really, yeah.
Oh, it's wonderful. I mean, you said that you were the youngest of several brothers. And tell us a little bit about where you grew up. And tell me about, you know, have you got happy memories of where you grew up? Tell us a little bit of backstory.
Sure, yeah. I grew up, so I was born in Florida, actually. And my parents were living down there with my two brothers, Alex and Stefan. And I have other siblings from my dad's first marriage, but I didn't meet them until after my dad died. And we moved back to Canada. So I grew up in New Brunswick. That's in Atlantic Canada. And we moved around a bit. At one point, my dad committed bank fraud and disappeared. But for like a good 10 years, we had this real stable, idyllic life living in a place called Fredericton, New Brunswick, a lovely town, conservative town, you know, university town, and we owned our own home. And I do have very good memories. A lot of, like, birthday parties in the backyard and barbecues, and my dad and my mom were both, obviously, that time we all lived together, and we played a lot. My parents put my brother Alex and I into piano lessons and encouraged us to do art, and we, it just seemed like a kind of a somewhat of a perfect life. You know, there were hard memories for me too. There's trauma for sure in my background with my father. And then my father wanted to buy this mansion in Rothsay, New Brunswick. And of course, what little girl doesn't want to live in a mansion,
absolutely,
you know? And so we moved, and for 2 years, we lived in this beautiful miniature castle. And then my dad disappeared. He disappeared in the middle of the night. So that was when years later, we found out he'd committed bank fraud. And he told me the stories about all this, but obviously longer stories and background, but I do have good memories from growing up. I have some tough memories too, from, you know, Doesn't everybody?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think we all have our own shit to process, don't we? I think, like,
yeah.
I mean, you said that your parents encouraged art and sent you and your brother to piano lessons. Was home quite musical? Was there records on at home growing up?
My dad had a very extensive vinyl collection, and it's funny, I remember falling in love with, like, a couple of the artists that he would have encouraged me to listen to were the Eurythmics and Tina and Ike. Yeah. And Tina Turner was had a huge impact on me. He took me to my first and only, but Tina Turner concert in Montreal.
Amazing.
In 1993, I believe. That's around when the What's Love Got to Do With It video came out. And that was, you know, just incredible. We actually went to the musical yesterday in London, and that was, I bawled my eyes out.
Christina, I saw that about a month ago for the first time. It's outrageous. I do you know what? The scene where she sings River Deep Mountain Eye, absolutely. I was bawling my eyes out.
Powerful. Oh, it was so beautiful, so well done. And it was kind of neat to know that Tina was, you know, had some involvement in developing that musical as well.
I mean, they're two very powerful women, aren't they, that you've just referenced there, you know, as a young girl, to, you know, to have them kind of figures in your life, you know, that you was listening to and seeing, like Tina Turner and Annie Lennox.
Yeah,
they're
Annie
two
Lennox.
Very, very, you know, powerful, trailblazing women in music.
Yeah, I wanted to be like them. I wanted to be able to be in music videos and to make somebody feel the way they made me feel. Yeah. They made me feel like I could do something magical, maybe. You know, I wasn't feeling very good in my life many times when I was younger and didn't know the way out. And they offered this way out, this vision of what, you know, it was really incredible. And of course, I didn't know how to articulate that at the time, but I know that's what it was. Like, I remember feeling different and starting to daydream and, like, just wondering. And you know, now when you look back on your life and you see where things, you know, where you were led, it's kind of, it's fun. It's really fun exercise. But my parents didn't play music or sing. But my dad was a huge fan. Both my parents were a fan of the arts, and we would frequent, like, the theater and go to musicals. And my dad, although, you know, he talked about, like he was a businessman. He was an entrepreneur. He was a dreamer. He risked big in his life, you know, to the demise of, like, a lot of people in his life and his relationships. But he didn't know that I became a singer. He died before I ventured off and really? Did that. Yeah, so he would have, like, probably been the first one to want to be my manager or something. Like, because when he was really young, he owned production companies and put on shows. And then he, you know, started having kids and affairs and complicating his life. And so that went aside. But I think he could have had a life in the arts for sure. And my mom was a nurse. She's a very generous, caretaking kind of person. And, you know, I think she's got a lot of creative talents as well, but didn't really develop them over the years because she had to work, and she loved working. She loved being a nurse. But she's a creative woman as well, I think, you know, and I get my entrepreneurial and my, like, organizational skills and all that from my parents, and they were not, like, lazy people. They worked there every day. They were never bored. So I get that from them, you know.
Tell me about the song that reminds you of your time at school, please, Christina.
Okay, well, when you said school, I went right to university freshman year. My roommate, we met Angie McDonald, and within 5 minutes, we both were, you know, like, secret Bryan Adams fans. And Bryan was playing this acoustic tour in Halifax, where we were going to university, that fall. So we bought tickets. We go to the concert. By the way, the song is Summer of 69. So I should say that. And why is, well, I'm telling you the story of why. So we get to the concert. We're in, like, the eighth row or whatever back. And during Frosh Week, as what we call the, you know, the party first week of university, I befriended a lot of football players who ended up being security at these big concerts. And lo and behold, they bring us right up to the front row. And midway through the concert, Brian is calling people up to be in this like pseudo band to play a song. He was doing this at all of his shows at that time. And so he pulls up a drummer, guitar player, and so on and so forth. And then he says, all we need now is a singer. And I was not, you know, I've never written a song. I barely sang. I mean, I dabbled in it and whatnot, but I just threw my hand up because I just wanted to meet the guy. Like, you're talking about a girl who, when she was really young, traced a picture of a pony and wrote Brian a letter and declared my love and adoration. In any case, so people around me just rallied and pointed at me. And
even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And they pulled me up on stage. And Brian put his arm around me and he said, hey, what's your name? And I said, Christina. And he's like, what do you want to sing? And a week before that, or a couple weeks before, he had forgot the words to the national anthem in Canada. And it became like this headline in Canada. So I said, well, Brian, why don't we sing the national anthem? And the whole auditorium, like it was probably like 12,000 people or whatever, just kind of gasped but laughed. And Brian was sort of like, you little shit, you know? And he's like, no, what do you really want to sing? And I knew all his lyrics, but like, all I could say was Summer 69. I was so nervous. Yeah. And so we did Summer 69, and then that is the song that reminds me of school.
I mean, there's no better reason. I don't think I've done 500 episodes of this podcast, and I don't think I've ever had a reason to pick a song as good as that one. The fact that you've actually got up on stage as a kid and sang it with him is ridiculously cool.
Yeah, it was cool. I thought at that time, I thought I had made it. Like, I thought, this is it. Like, I can die now. I'm 18 years old, and yeah, I'm good. I'm famous.
I mean, let's just talk about Summer 69 as well as a record. I mean, and also, as you know, in regards to sort of Canada, I mean, what a legacy, you know, that Brian Adams is carving out for himself there. You know, just an absolute pioneer of taking sort of, you know, what he does far, you know, as far and wide from Canada across the world. But to talk about Summer 69, because for me, I don't know if it is for you, but he's wrote a lot of great records, but Summer 69 is perfection, isn't it? Like, lyrically, it's one of them songs, because it's a story, and it's very much, you can shut your eyes and you can see it, you know, and just from that very first opening line, I think it's so easy to fall in love with that record, because musically it's fantastic. I think it's got one of the greatest middle eights of all time as well. The middle eight in that record is fantastic. And it's just a beautiful story about being young and wanting to crack it. And it's very inspiring. Perfect record. So you mentioned that at 18, when you'd done this, you dabbled a little bit in singing. And so you hadn't gone the route of going to university to study music. Like, what point, what was you doing at university, and what did you want to be at that point?
I just drank every day, and I was in business class at that time, business school. And I thought that I thought that my future was become a businesswoman, buy fancy clothes, be social, social and look good, dress up, I didn't know I could be an artist. I didn't know how to make that happen. I hadn't seen that example in my world. I had never seen a singer-songwriter perform. I'd seen a few bands, gone to a couple of massive concerts, but, how do you go from nothing to that?
Yeah.
I had some piano music as a child, background, but I quit at a certain age. And so for me, it took my father dying when I was 19 to change get back and discover and get back on my path with art. And when he died, I became quite depressed, and it was just a really hard time. And I quit drinking. I became sober. I started reading different books, like, oh my goodness, The Teachings of Don Juan, and just started, thinking about how to take care of myself. And
was the drinking becoming a problem then?
Yeah, it was. Because I was still drinking quite a bit at university almost every day. And I didn't care anymore. But I went from a straight A student to I was failing my courses and wanting to cheat on my tests. And I just wasn't myself. And I didn't see the point of much and was really sad. And I cried a lot, and definitely depression, right? But I'm not someone who can stay in that for long. So I just needed to get away. And I went to Austin, Texas, and I got a job as a nanny. And I took the time. I took time away from school and stress and pressure to honestly just kind of daydream. And my host mom gave me The Gift of an Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. I started journaling. I went out to hear live music. My host parents also encouraged me to go do that. And my host father gave me a cassette tape with Sean Colvin. And I was like, what is this? And found these singer-songwriters in Austin that made me want to buy an acoustic guitar. So I did that. And then I went to Germany for a year as a nanny and started writing songs. Then I went back to Austin and stayed for about 3.5 years. And I just went and played open mics, started gigging, did my first record. I just tried to, I threw myself into it, into that world. I figured, what have I got to lose? We're going to die. I've seen that. My dad died. I thought he was going to live forever. What am I going to do with my life? What the fuck?
Christina, you've twice now used the word daydreaming.
I thought you were going to say twice now you've sworn.
No.
You've cussed.
No, it's fine. You use the word daydreaming, which I love, and it's been amazing the amount of guests, whether they be actors, musicians, comedians, that have used that word daydreaming. And it's not a dirty word. They said I'd be at school daydreaming, and it's like, yes, you should be studying, but if them studies aren't resonating with you and you're just daydreaming about something way more exciting that's firing you up, I think there's a lot to be said for it.
Yeah, giving yourself time and space is so important. Ask yourself the best question I was asked in my first therapy session was, what do you want? What do you want out of life? And then jump ahead to your deathbed. What are you going to regret if you don't do it in this lifetime? Do you want to have regrets? So when you're afraid of things, getting up and singing in front of people, it's terrifying at first, right? But when you think of your death, it kind of gives you the guts to go ahead and be brave and just do it. But yeah, you need to, like, if you want to be a creator, you have to make space. It doesn't have to be a lot of time, but make space to sit there and just kind of contemplate and write things down. Journal, like, list make, you know, what do you want to do? What's draw maps, like, of the projects that come up in your mind, and how do you connect the dots? And it's really important. And when I don't do that stuff, make time for that, then I, you know, you can keep yourself busy with a million things, right? And yeah, bookkeeping and accounting and boring shit. So months can pass, years without creating anything and or having real joy in your life, you know?
Tell me about the first record you remember buying.
Sure thing. It's funny because I... Record and song. Okay, so...
Song, yeah, track.
No, it's okay. It was actually a record because the song was on it. So I went on this mission when I was a teenager because my dad was a big Roy Orbison fan, another power singer.
Absolutely.
And I loved Roy Orbison. My dad would walk around the house often just singing Blue Bayou. And, you know, I remember driving trips down to Florida with my family and hearing Roy on the radio. Or maybe it was a cassette tape that we put in. And so it's you know, very nostalgic for me. But anyway, it was my dad's birthday. And it's so hard to shop for your parents,
right?
And especially your father. And I didn't know if he had this record. I don't think he did, but this song, Blue Bayou. And so I went to my local mall in Grand Falls, New Brunswick, which is where my mom, my brother Alex, and I moved after my father disappeared. And I went to the mall. That time you could smoke in the mall, so it had that terrible, nauseating smell in it. And I went to the record store, and I was so embarrassed to ask if they had any Roy Orbison, because the guy was like, that is... He thought that was lame, like, that I was asking for Roy Orbison. So I had to order this Greatest Hits Roy Orbison cassette tape, and Blue Bayou was on that. And then I gave that to my dad, because we would visit my dad in the summers in secret. And so I had to plan the order of this Roy Orbison album for months. Yeah. And I was so excited to give it to him. You know, my dad was a good gift giver. And so, you know, I put a lot of thought into that because I knew he would like it.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
It's so weird, that relationship that people have with the guy in the record store, because you do feel judged, don't you? It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's that high fidelity thing where you just think, oh, I've got to be cool, because you build up this kind of thing that the guy in the record store is the, you know, the wizard of music that knows everything and he's there to judge you. And it's so weird. I think as you get older, obviously you just think, well, I like what I like, so fuck what that guy thinks.
Who cares? Yeah, I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's probably easier now, too, to like, or, you know, whatever you want, people are not as judgmental. But back then, like, Roy wasn't cool at that time. And, and I'd never been into a record store. I think that was my first time, to be honest.
How important did the record store become for you as you got older? You know, and to this day, like, if you're touring and you get to a town and there's a record store, will you still go in there?
Oh boy. Well, I don't usually have a lot of time to do things when I'm on tour because I'm working all the time and like usually tour managing myself and whatnot. Yeah. But I mean, in the past and early on, I would play record stores and do those for promotional reasons. And like, it felt cool to be in a room with all the vinyl again, you know, because there was a period where vinyl was kind of going out.
Yeah.
And now there's a revival, which is so great. But I'm not someone who, at some point in my life, my dad was a collector. He sold stamps for a living, and he was a bit of a hoarder, sort of. And I'm not someone who collects. We do have a vinyl collection, but it's not massive.
Yeah.
And so I don't go and shop for these things. Like I actually, I hate to say it, but I actually do turn to my playlist, my Spotify playlist when I listen to music. I just don't like, you know, having CDs around, but I sure do love selling them, you know, and vinyl as well. But I mean, you know, I'm someone who would have, like when I was younger and actually took time to listen to records, I would sit down, read the lyrics. I'd want the lyrics from the artwork and buy. But I usually did that at home in private, you know. You kind of go to the record store and buy a bunch of stuff and take your chances and go home and then obsess over it all and take time with it. But
absolutely. Absolutely. Let's talk about clubbing. And for this track, tell me the song that soundtracked your time doing that.
All right. When you said clubbing, you meant like dance club.
Well, no, because...
Or what did you mean?
I do, I guess. But it's a misconception because I speak to so many kind of, guitar music, you know, rock bands and musicians that are more based around, you know, guitar-based drums. I have to sort of always add to this question that, look, this can be your local dive bar. This can be your local rock club. Oh. This can be, you know, a local folk club. It, you know, it's not got to be this sort of techno haven of, you know, guys with glow sticks and just raving hard. Like, so it can be just them places in your sort of formative years where you would go out week in, week out and hear music and dance.
Okay, so for me, again, this right away triggered an electronic song, because clubbing to me is like dance, electronic music. And there was a period of my life, like I do love to dance and I love like house music. And I don't go do that anymore. But when I was really young, I did it for a brief period of time and it helped me get on my path, whatever, got me from one place to another. So when I lived in Germany as a nanny in 1999 to 2000, the first 3 months I lived in this tiny town called Salzgittertide. It's near Wolfenbüttel, where they make Jägermeister.
Right.
And outside this town, this larger city called Braunschweig, which is Brunswick in English. And first 3 months there as a nanny, I didn't know any German. I was learning it from the kids and my host mom. I didn't have any friends. And finally, I got the guts to take the local transit by myself and go venture into... I wanted to find a place to dance. So I found this little club called Luna Bar. And every Saturday night, while I was a nanny, I would go and dance all night long to the house music. I met all these friends there. I'm still in touch with a couple of them, 23 years later. And one of the songs that I discovered around that time was Bob Sinclair's My Only Love. And it kind of starts off with this, like, I don't know, this synthy kind of siren, beep, 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 beep. And then this sort of like jungle rhythms. And my body just like, it took over my body. I sort of like felt possessed, but in the best way. And it made me so happy. And I remember getting a recording of it. And then it would be on my jogging playlist. Yeah. And that song still makes me really, really happy. And it reminds me of that time, that clubbing time, when I would just go out by myself all night and dance. And I loved it. I could leave whenever I wanted. I was also sober at that time. And I remember, for me, it represented a time of like not needing any substances to be authentic and like dance, you know, because when you're younger, like you need all these things in order to get up and have the courage to do something like dance. And I didn't need that. I found a way to tap into something bigger. It was with music, you know, it was cool.
Christine, so much of what you said about your journey at this point, you know, to move in to different places and to go to Germany and what sounds like, you know, initially, you know, quite isolated because you didn't speak the language and you was relying on the people that you live with. Where does this confidence come from? Because that, I mean, for most people, like, you know, the thought of getting on stage would terrify most people. But even like, you know, the same can be applied to move into a strange country on your own, to going clubbing on your own. Tell me about your relationship with confidence.
Oh, well, it's a good question, because I think in my mind, sometimes I'm more confident and I have like a vision for, you know, you could see yourself doing something, you get excited. But then, I still grapple with like real insecurity, you know, feeling of unworthiness. So it's this ongoing battle, like this dichotomy of like, yeah, I could do that. That would be fun. That would be great. What an adventure. I want to live life. And then the other side of it, the dark side, the voice in your brain that's like, you fool, you have to be responsible and, you know, play it safe. And safety is really important to me, to feel safe and secure, you know, so that I can not feel the dreaded stress that creates so many like just psychosomatic symptoms and, sure, and pain and all that. But I think it was just this stronger desire to want to have a life, like live the fullest life that I could back then. I think when my father, you know, died to that, that kind of all the things I would have really been afraid of. I don't know, I guess maybe there was a numbness too at the time that I just didn't care anymore about a lot of things. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to do this. Yeah. What have I got to lose? That kept coming up. And yeah, I really want to do this. And then good things would result. Like any time in my life, even when I was younger, any time I would be brave and do something, even if, you know, it was embarrassing or something, like there was usually somebody I met or an experience I had that was so joyful and confirming that I had done the right thing that made me want to do it again. Yeah. And, you know, staying home and doing nothing, like nothing happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I guess, I don't know if that answers your question.
Completely. Okay, so I'm going to take you home. I'm interested to know where home is, because you're a bit of a nomad. So for track 6... a favorite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so, I mean, my home now, I call Nova Scotia, for right. Sure. I've been there since 2004, I moved back. So, really, almost 20 years. Sure. One of my favorite artists who had a huge impact on my career, the fact that I'm still a singer-songwriter, is a guy named Matt Mays. And he's a Canadian singer-songwriter. He's from Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. And the song I picked is called On the Hood. And I've had the, you know, pleasure of being at many of his concerts where this song is played. And it's an instant fan favorite connection. And I think, so first of all, if you're a fan of like Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers or like Neil Young, you know, Matt's sort of reminiscent of that, certainly inspired by that, but like his own, he's got his own unique voice and he's a fantastic singer-songwriter. And yeah, that song reminds me of like being young and kind of having this rebellious attitude, like I'm going to do what I want to do because it's the right thing to do. Not because, you know, Matt's somebody who's had a lot of people around him, you know, probably encouraging him to do X, Y, and Z with his music career. And I feel, I really respect that he, his focus is the artistry and following what the song needs and wants and, you know, not writing a, going out, like not just going out to write hits for the sake of writing hits. So yeah, I really respect that. And in this song, On the Hood, I mean, yeah, being, it reminds me of being young and having this rebellious attitude, but also like it reminds me of being, living by the ocean. And when you live by the ocean and you live in Nova Scotia or Atlantic Canada, like it's hard not to want to come back there and live there, which is what I did. And it's just, I have fond memories of just, you know, him inviting me up on stage and performing for his audiences early in my career and seeing the audience respond to this song and sing along and it, how it means so much to so many folks in Canada. They just love it so much. It brings a lot of joy to people. It's got such a great groove, like that sort of Heartbreakers, Neil Young vibe, you know? So, yeah.
Great choice. Great choice. We spoke about confidence a moment ago, and to you know, to have had the career that you've had in such a tough industry to maintain a career in the music industry, it's such a cutthroat business, and to sustain a career is fantastic. So, confidence aside, talk to me a little bit about drive and how driven you are.
Sometimes I'm not, like, I'm sometimes, like, in recent years I feel that's the burnout talking.
Yeah,
you know, I think a lot of people are feeling that burnout, and that I've had to check myself and, you know, shut off my devices and fight to keep my time, you know, for myself. And So my drive is right now, I mean, I'm a little concerned about it because, as you said, it is a really, it's hard to maintain a momentum, and I'm still figuring that out. Maybe this is just a certain time in my career, like, sure. But, and I, you know, and I'm also, you're, you know, you asked this question in the middle of an, I'm just about to put out a new album, and I've been just doing so much to get ready for that, probably more than I've ever done for any other album. And we're talking, I mean, I'm at a level that I'm at, you know, like the majority of singer-songwriters out there, I'm not like this mega celebrity or anything like that. So, yeah, it's a hard go. I think what keeps me holding on is that love, for like, why do I do this? Why do I do this? And I think it's about exercising my creative freedom and my voice, because I've thought a lot about this over the years. When I was a little girl, I felt like I was silenced, and that's through my trauma that, you know, happened to me. And I found with songwriting and then singing, telling your story, I found it really cathartic. I found connection with people and a purpose and I guess my gift. My voice, my main instrument that I'm always trying to develop, like, and then, you know, there's things along the way that get me excited. I love different projects and collaborations. There's just so much about what I do that I love. So the things that stress me out about it, like trying to find money to do what you love and just trying to hit deadlines and all those things, like, I guess all the things I love about it just do outweigh all the stressful things. And And I just try the best I can to manage and keep myself, like, keep my life as simple as I can. But yeah, it's hard, and I struggle with it.
Okay. So for this last track, you get to be a tastemaker and turn someone onto something new. And for that question, it is a song that you think many people may not know that you would like them to hear, please.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for asking, Stu. I would love for you all to listen to my dear friend, he's one of my best friends, Ryan McGrath, has a song called After All. It's on his Pink Lark EP, and you can find it on Spotify. He's one of these iconic singers. He really is, and he's got a very unique voice as well. And first of all, I love the way the acoustic guitar in this song was recorded, because you can really hear all the emotion that this particular guitar is capable of. But, you know, like any good guitar sound, you need a great player. And, you know, Ryan, I feel like the sound that comes out of the guitar comes from within the person playing it. So you hear the emotion in the guitar playing, but you also hear it, you know, in his voice. And it's all about, it's a song that I think we can all relate to if you're someone who's ever been in a relationship. It's hard not to lose your way. Like, how do you stay in a relationship and find a sense of wholeness with another person, like, without completely, like, you know, just doing everything for everyone else in your life? Like, how do you go, wait a second, what do I want? And how can I do this within the relationship and feel whole and be happy? And, like, it can be really hard.
Yeah.
Even in the happiest of relationships, how do you not lose yourself? And so, it's a beautiful song. I just, it makes me cry. It's actually, you're going to think I'm weird, but it's on my running playlist,
right.
Even though it's not like a dance, upbeat, yeah, you know, tune.
So people regularly, yeah, just see you jogging through Canada, crying your eyes out.
I'm bawling. I'm bawling when I run because I'm listening to, like, I Will Always Love You, Whitney Houston, After All by Ryan McGrath. You know, there's just, there's so many beautiful songs and musicians out there that I'm glad you asked, because they don't necessarily get to be heard with all the stuff that's out there now and all the noise, and then people have big machines behind them pushing their music, and a lot of us don't. So I'm glad you asked about
that's
Ryan.
The exact reason I put that question in there. And we make it really easy for people to go and check out them records, because we put together a little Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast with all of the tracks that that we've spoken about today, and obviously your music. So let's talk about your music. So what's happening?
Well, I just released a single called Little Princess with this wild music video directed by Brendan Henry. I actually got to wear a motion capture suit, and so I play myself in my home in Nova Scotia, and then I take a trip into outer space, and I play this character LP, Little Princess, that's out in space, and it's actually me in space. It's wild. So we put out that single. It's the third of the fourth singles coming out before the album comes out for my album Storm. That's 11 tracks. We'll have vinyl CDs and all that's available on my Bandcamp for pre-order now. And then my husband and I, Dale, who's my guitar player and co-produced this album, we head out to tour in Europe. So we've got about 35 plus dates this fall in Europe, mainly Germany, Austria, Switzerland, Netherlands. And then hopefully next year we'll do some Canada. But hey, we're back in the UK in March for about 3 weeks. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Oh, fantastic. And Christine, if people want to keep up to speed with releases, tour dates, anything else that you're up to, where's the best place to keep up to speed?
Thank you for asking. ChristinaMartin.net. And there's a link there to my podcast as well, Chat with Heart. And all my music, my tour dates, my videos, everything. ChristinaMartin.net. Links to socials like Instagram is where I usually do my posts, and Facebook. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, look, if it's cool with you, Christina, when this comes out, we'll tag you in everything. So people, if they're not following you already on the socials, they can go and do so.
Yeah. Can you imagine if I'd said, no, Stu, that's okay. Please don't tag me. That's so embarrassing.
I'd be like, right, let's wrap this up. Cannot work with this woman. She's outrageous.
Yeah. Yeah. For 50 quid. For 50 quid, you could tag me. How about that?
Let's do that. Love it. Christina, I've had such a lovely time talking records with you. Honestly, thank you so much for coming on.
You're awesome. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolute pleasure. I'm going to press stop, but don't go anywhere.
Okay.
Oh, how great was Christina? That was such a lovely chat. Go check out the new music. And should you find yourself in any of the aforementioned countries that she's touring in, head along and get yourself a ticket and get involved. Head over to Spotify as well and check out Christina's playlist. You can access that. As mentioned at the beginning, if you want to sort of access more playlists and you want to watch this episode and you want to come to the live shows and you want to get stuck in with all things Off the Beaten Track, then head over to Patreon, and it won't cost you anything. Head over to there and press play on the video, and you can see my stupid face telling you all about what you get for your $1 a month. And so that's patreon.com/offthebeatandtrack. I'm back next time. In the meantime, be nice to each other. Thanks again for listening. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.